Welcome back to the KPO podcast. I'm your host, Jagisha. This week on the podcast, I have debut author Nick Medina, and we're going to be talking about Sisters of the Lost Nation. It's a timely novel that wants to bring focus and light to the missing Native and Indigenous women throughout the tribes in U.S. and Canada. Join us as Nick and I talk about his book and what inspired this story.
Welcome back, listeners. This week on the podcast, I have author Nick Medina, and we are going to be talking about Sisters of the Lost Nation. Welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So to start off with, tell my listeners about Sisters of the Lost Nation.
Yeah, it's a story about a Native American girl named Anna Horn. She's 17 years old, and she's searching for answers to help her figure out why young women and girls, including her own little sister, have been going missing from their tribe's reservation. And at its core, I think it's really a story about being haunted. You know, Anna, of course, is deeply disturbed by these disappearances, and it's something that quickly kind of consumes her. And not only is she haunted by these disappearances, but she's also haunted by this mythological creature that stems from tribal folklore. And as the story progresses, she starts to wonder if perhaps this mythological creature might be responsible for the disappearances.
So what inspired the story?
The inspiration really came from a newspaper article that I came across back in 2018. And it was an article about the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls epidemic. And in that article, they talked about a young woman named Ashley Heavy Runner Lauren, who was 20 years old when she went missing from the Blackfeet Reservation in Montana. This was in 2017. And they included some quotes from Ashley's sister, Kimberly. And Kimberly had been searching for her sister since day one, and she vowed to keep searching, even if she has to search until she's 80 years old. And unfortunately, she's still searching today. She hasn't found her sister yet. But after I read that article, you know, I pretty much started working on this story right then and there. That night, I started taking notes and forming the outline. And of course, after reading that article, I also read a lot of other articles, did a lot of other research, and really learned a lot about this epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls.
Yeah, I think I've only just been learning about it as I've been talking to other Native authors for the podcast, mm-hmm. and also just like you, reading articles, and I think it's one of these things that no one's been talking about a great deal, or it's not been covered, especially by the media.
Yeah, over the last few decades that this has been going on, it didn't really get a whole lot of attention, but fortunately now, in the last few years, it has been getting some traction. And a lot is due in part to Kimberly Lauren, who I mentioned. She's done a great amount of work meeting with senators and trying to call attention to this issue and making changes. And there have been a couple of laws signed or acts signed into law over the last couple of years as well. So it's encouraging that hopefully things will take a turn for the better. But there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. And of course, there's thousands of missing young women and girls, which is pretty heartbreaking because there's so many families out there who are suffering and they can't find, their sisters, their daughters, their nieces, their cousins. Hopefully this book will shed a little more light on the issue, but also give the readers a good time because it is a thriller, got a mystery, might give you a scare as well. So
yeah,
I think it's a pretty good balance.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, one of the things you mentioned, you said there was a lot of laws, but May 5th is now National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Native Women and Girls.
Right.
And there's been, as you said, several laws that have been signed in. So Savannah's Act in 2020. Right. And I think I've been reading your author's notes. And so this is
the Not Invisible Act as well. Yeah. Both of those acts, the Not Invisible Act and Savannah's Act, aim at just really clarifying the roles of authorities, because part of the problem was that, no one really knew who's responsible for what. So when a young woman goes missing from a reservation, is it just the tribe's responsibility to try to find her, or can they turn to other resources off of the reservation? And oftentimes when tribal authorities would try to get help off of the reservation, they would be turned down because, of course, jurisdictions have their own problems, and they have limited resources and limited funds. So it just made the issue very complicated. So now these new acts are aimed at trying to clarify the responsibilities of tribal, federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. And hopefully it will make things better and easier for these families who are searching for their loved ones.
Yeah, definitely. Now, in your book, the Dakota Nation, it's fictional, but I know, I think you said that you brought in several different Native cultures and traditions. And so could you just talk about some of those that you brought in?
Sure. A lot of it comes back to, the folklore and the mythology, which I really tried to incorporate through the book. And I used folklore that comes from different tribal nations. For instance, in the story, there is a tale of two sisters, and that tale is inspired by a Wintu tale. And the Wintu are from California, California Nation. There's also a story in the book about a basket and a bow ceremony, and that's a pretty significant story within my book. And I adapted that from the Great Basin tribes, which include the Western Shoshone, the Goshute, the Ute, the Paiute, and the Washoe. I also used some influences from my own tribe. I'm a member of the Tunica Biloxi tribe in Louisiana, so I used the origin story of my own tribe, and I also used some of the traditional words, such as like henny means welcome, so I incorporated that into the text. And then maybe the most interesting or most compelling part, at least to me, is the horror aspect. And in the story, as I mentioned earlier, there's this mythological creature, this entity that kind of stalks Anna and scares her. And I adapted that from a Wintu tale and also a Cheyenne legend, because both of those tribes have stories about this mythological creature. And I should also say the tribe itself, I named it the Dakota tribe. Dakota is a Sioux word, which means friend to all. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it would be a pretty fitting name for a tribe, since I wanted this fictional tribe to be able to sort of represent many tribal nations. And I wanted people to feel united by this tribe.
Yes. And, women are going missing across multiple tribes. And so I think that also brings that aspect into it.
Yeah, this epidemic is huge. It affects many tribal nations in the United States and Canada as well. So yeah, I wanted to address this issue, make it something that isn't just limited to one tribal nation, but make sure that it's clear that it is something that impacts a lot of Indigenous and Native peoples.
So can we talk a little bit more about your main character, Anna? Now, you use the term Two-Spirit, and I was wondering if you could explain what that term means.
Sure. Two-Spirit is a term that was coined in the 1990s, but it refers to Native individuals who have been really revered within tribes for centuries. And Two-Spirited people often are regarded as special within a tribe. They're very well respected, because Two-Spirited people incorporate more than just a single, let's say, gender, but it's not just limited to gender, but it's often associated with what a gender represents. So let's say like a male gender would typically be considered strong, a leader, or maybe a warrior. And then a female gender might be associated with caretaking, maybe even things like, collecting, gathering things for the tribe. And so a Two-Spirited person is someone who encompasses all of that and more. And sometimes it does play into sexuality as well. In modern day culture, Two-Spirited people are often associated with the LGBTQ+ community, but not all Two-Spirited people are, gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. But I think that's the interesting thing with Native cultures is that, you know, they welcomed and appreciated these two-spirited people, and they didn't shun them if they were gay or lesbian, or what we would today call gay or lesbian. So yeah, Anna falls into that category. And this is a discovery process throughout the story. She discovers her, you know, her true identity, and it helps her understand herself better, because at the start of the story, you know, a lot of people, especially her classmates, don't really know what to make of her. They don't know really what she is, and they give her a lot of grief for this. So by the end of the story, Anna has a much stronger understanding of herself, and that allows her to. It just helps Anna ensure that her tribe's legacy is going to be upheld, and it helps her help her people basically
Yeah, I mean,
stumble
I
on.
found her to be a fascinating character. Her strength is amazing for someone, you know, she's a young woman, she's in high school, but she's incredibly strong and even stronger than her parents as she's pushing to find her sister.
Yeah, she's a very, very unique individual. Very loyal to her family and her sister, even when her family isn't perhaps as loyal to her as she is to them. But I think that's part of her personality that ultimately does help her in the end, because she's the one who's going to stand by and make sure that this evil on the reservation gets wiped out. You know, she's the one who's going to make sure that things get set right.
So, could you talk a little bit more about your writing process and also some of the research you did for the book?
Sure. A lot of the research revolved around, you know, finding articles about the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls epidemic. I read a lot about different families who are going through this and trying to find their lost loved ones. I also read a lot of, you know, mythology. There's some great texts out there. There's one that, excuse me, that was published right about the time when I was writing this story called Native American Myths and Legends. And that has a great amount of origin stories and different, you know, basically lessons that you can learn from different Native characters. I also turned to a number of documentaries, one of them being a documentary that's produced by Louisiana Public Broadcasting, and it's all about the Tunica-Biloxi tribe that I belong to. So that helped me kind of shape the Dakota tribe. I used a lot of what I saw in that documentary as an influence. And then, of course, there's been, you know, a lot of true crime television and true crime documentaries about the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls epidemic. So all of that was really helpful when it came to trying to put this story together. As far as my writing process, I think I'm a pretty disciplined writer. I write every day. You know, I'm not someone who's able to take a break. I know some people might step back from a work in progress, but for me, I have to stay focused on it until it's done. So typically I'll write for at least 4 to 6 hours in a day. Anything longer than that, might become a little bit, tough for me. Although I do end up in front of my computer sometimes for much longer than that, but I'll be doing other stuff like editing or brainstorming. But the actual writing process itself, usually, you know, 4 to 6 hours is a pretty solid length for me. Yeah, I think my process is pretty, you know, pretty kind of basic. There's nothing special to it, I don't think. I like to be in a pretty quiet setting like I am right here in my office, and limit my distractions and just, you know, focus on the story.
Now, did you plot everything out, or do you write by the seat of your pants, as they say, a pantser?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely a plotter. I'm not a pantser. I'm pretty envious of people who can do things by the seat of their pants. I like to have a really solid outline, so I'll spend actually a couple months getting the outline together before I dive into the actual writing process. And then once I have that outline, it just makes things move pretty quickly for me, so I could, you know, knock out a manuscript in a pretty quick amount of time, or a pretty short amount of time, I should say.
Now, one of the things that I really liked about the story was that you went back and forth. It's almost like two timelines, but not exactly. So it's like day two, and then you jump over to day, 23 or something like that.
Yeah.
So what made you decide to do that?
I have to be honest. I wrote the story linearly in a chronological order, and it was actually my editor's idea to break it up and turn it into this, you know, now and then kind of setting so or setup. So, you know, you're bouncing from, like you said, you know, day one to day 36, and then you're day four to day 33. The whole idea behind that was to try to put the reader right into the heart of the conflict right from the start, so that you get this sense of danger and dread, and also it heightens the mystery. I think it makes you want to find out what's happening. You know, how did we end up here on day 33? So you have to, you know, continue reading until you can get back to day, you know, day one or day four or whatever. So yeah, that was the. I think it was a brilliant idea by my editor, and it's really what made me want to work with my editor, because when we were shopping the story around, we talked with several different publishers, and each editor had their own vision for the book. And you know, the editor I ended up working with proposed this back and forth structure, and I really loved the idea, so we went with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it really increased the tension, you know, in the book as you're like, okay, what happened? Yeah. Who is it? So, not to give away anything.
Right, yeah. But that's good to hear. Thank you.
So what's next? Are you working on something new?
I am always working on something. We have our second novel, or my second novel. I like to refer to my team as we, but we have a great publishing team with Berkeley, great editor, great agent, and a whole lot of other people behind the scenes who work on all kinds of stuff for us. But yeah, I have another novel coming out 1 year after this one. So next April, it should be out. And it takes place in the same world, so to speak, as this novel, but it's not a direct sequel or prequel. Mm-hmm. But the stories do hinge off of each other. So you'll see recurring characters and some recurring themes, but the main characters are completely different, and the stories are, you know, individual. They stand on their own. So that's been a lot of fun for me to work within this world that I kind of created, and be able to focus on different characters. And then, yeah, in addition to that, I'm outlining something new right now. And I also have another manuscript that I completed last summer that I'm working on revising and, you know, getting into shape. So, yeah, lots going on. I also have a short story coming out in September as part of an anthology called Never Whistle at Night. Mm-hmm. That's being published by Penguin Random House. So I'm looking forward to that as well. But yeah, lots of stuff going on.
Now, are these going to be mysteries and thrillers also that are coming out?
Yeah, they'll be in the mystery, thriller, horror category. That tends to be my preferred genres, I guess. But I don't like to just limit myself. You know, I think there are some aspects of even this book, Sisters of the Lost Nation, that could be considered, you know, literary fiction, or, you know, even mystery or suspense. So I like to blend genres.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So last question is there anything that you'd like to add or say, or is there a question I should have asked but didn't ask?
Oh, it's a great question. I don't know. I just really want to say that, I hope this book does do some good. I hope it sheds light on the social issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. But I also hope people will have a good time with it. It is meant to give you a little bit of a scare, maybe creep you out, give you that thrill. So I think it can give you a good time while also perhaps opening your eyes to an issue that maybe you weren't as familiar with before.
Definitely. I think this book was definitely needed, because of what's been happening. And so I think this will give a lot of insight to people who didn't know anything about the things that have been happened to the women.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you helping me spread the word about Sisters of the Lost Nation.
That's our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Join us next week when we talk to Chanel Cleeton about her new book, The Cuban Harris. I'm going to leave you with a quote by Lamarty. Sometimes when one person is missing, the whole world seems depopulated. Until next week.